Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker, and today I am talking to Billy Boulos. He is one of the co-founders of Life Jacket Skin. Life Jacket Skin, their story began with personal setback. They were three healthy young men who thought they were indestructible, but then several of their friends, all healthy and in their 30s, like them, were hit by cancer. One of them was Jono, their co-founder. And we're going to get into a lot in this episode, not just about the products, but what the effects have on men in particular when it comes to UV and UVA. We're going to be talking about branding, product testing, all of that. But we should also tell you that there is a discount code for Life Jacket Skin. And the discount code, very easy, Menswear Style. And it doesn't matter if that's lowercase or uppercase, Menswear Style, just punch that in at the checkout and you get 10% off the entire store. And the website is lifejacketskin.com. And here to tell us more about it is one of the co-founders, Billy Boulos.
Hi, everyone. I'm Billy, one of the co-founders, as you said. I haven't mastered this pitch. It's a bit long-winded, but I sort of say we're a skin protection brand. It's in the name, right? But I guess a lot of people don't really know what that means. We're kind of trying to create a new category. So I sort of normally just say, listen, Life Jacket is a positive brand on a mission, and we're trying to protect people's skin every day and reduce the incidence of skin cancer. And I know that sounds a bit heavy when you're introducing a brand. Ultimately, we make skincare and we make clothing, and we're trying to protect people's skin, something that we feel quite strongly about. We believe that that needs to be done on a daily basis, all year round, whether you live in the UK or Australia or wherever. So that's as you probably gathered, I haven't mastered the pitch, but that is kind of how I get there.
No, but you know what? It does actually open more doors of intrigue, because yeah, you're not just describing maybe a skincare brand that's nuts and bolts, like a moisturizer or facial wash. It sounds like there's something beneath the surface. So perhaps you can just drill down on some of the elements that are in your products, and what are the products exactly?
Yeah, I might, if it's okay with you, just start with the story, because that will educate why we make the products we make. I was sort of in my 30s doing a job I wasn't the most passionate about. And at the same time, I had five young male friends who were all sort of young, fit, there's nothing wrong with them, who got different forms of cancer. And one of them was my very best mate, Jono. And we were sitting down, he was having chemo one day, and we found out that two men die of skin cancer for every one woman. We said, listen, John, when you're better, and he had a bit of background in the chemistry and formulation and skincare world, when you're better, let's shake the tree. Let's make a brand that has a mission. Let's do something that we're a bit more passionate about. So we sort of said, and we got Jono's brother involved, Rob, and the three of us all sort of grew up as kids, said, let's make a brand with a mission to stop people getting skin cancer. And if you close your eyes and think about skin protection, and I'm very careful with my words there, because we don't want to be perceived as sun protection, which I'll explain shortly. But if you think of skin protection, you close your eyes and think of that sort of stock image of skin protection. It's a woman in a beach in a white bikini with a kid in a beach ball. And we sort of wanted to shake the tree and do something a bit different. So we've made a brand called Life Jacket that's a bit more, I don't know, a bit more fun, a bit more active, a bit more positive. We have made really great products, and we spend a long time doing that. And all of those products ultimately have the role of stopping skin damage, or attempting to stop skin damage in whatever form damage comes, because we're all out and about every day in the elements. The skin is the first line of defense for, you know, when we are outside, and it's the first line of defense to the inside of your body. So we try and protect that, and that's what we're doing. And in its worst scenario, skin damage equals cancer, but skin damage could just be redness, it could be soreness, itchiness, it could be discomfort. So we're just trying to address all of those forms of damage through a range of products.
Okay, interesting. So quick question, it's maybe a little bit off piece, but how much is UV and the sun related to skin cancer in men? Do we know?
In men, there's no sort of men versus in women. I think the sun is beating down on all of us, and it is 90% responsible for skin cancer.
Right.
It's also 80% responsible for aging. So UV is sort of going deep into the skin, causing damage to the proteins in deep in the skin, and also potentially causing DNA to become damaged. And that is why aging, skin aging, and is skin damage. And it's why UV is the sort of reason UV causes damage and in extremis cancer.
I think people might have the misconception of the sun always being out for there to be UV around. I mean, it could be a completely overcast day, right? And yeah. You still have UV out just attacking your skin, like relentlessly. Is that right?
You sound like a man who's read one of our blogs, or you're unusually sort of knowledgeable, because not many people realize that. And that's the biggest probably barrier we come up against and the biggest misconception. And this is going back to my point earlier of why we don't want to be perceived as a sun protection brand. We're a skin protection brand, and you need to protect your skin all year round. And it's precisely for that, for the reason you said, UV light, as long as it's light outside, there is UV attacking your skin. And I don't want to dwell on UV, because there are other things that attack your skin or damage your skin, like, you know, even humidity, central heating, pollution, smoke, and so on. There are lots of aggressors, if you like. But just focusing on UV and your question, 95% of the UV that touches your skin every day or reaches us on Earth is UVA. And UVA doesn't really vary in its potency during the year. So it's sort of 95% of UV that's hitting your skin is constant all year round, give or take. And the sort of the misconception that we have in this country especially is that I only need to protect my skin in the, when it's hot, or in July and August, or worse, you know, those 2 weeks when I go away on holiday to Spain. Nobody thinks, well, actually, there's UV just damaging my skin all year round. It even UVA goes through glass even. And so there is just that constant, ongoing, incidental damage. And that is why we are firm believers in everyday protection, not just, you know, when the sun is strong, which right. is when UVB does peak. So there is an element of UVB, which is the other sort of wavelength of UV that reaches us on Earth, but that's only 5%, and it peaks in summer, and that's the one that causes your skin to burn. And the one we're sort of culturally more familiar with, the one we're not familiar is the elephant in the room, which is that 95% UVA that's just ever present.
That's nuts. And you're right, I did read a lot of what you said on your blog, which people can find, by the way, on the website lifejacketskin.com. There's some really interesting stories on there and facts, obviously, but it kind of reaffirmed what I did learn about, it must have been about 10 years ago, because I watched a documentary on the Beeb, and I was working construction at the time, and this is how I know I remember it, because I was working construction and a lot of it was outside work, and I would be the only guy out of the crew that would at lunchtime get the sun cream out in the canteen and put sun cream on, even though it would be overcast, it'd be a crappy day. I'd be there lathering my skin up because I'd just seen this documentary about it, and everyone else would be looking at me going, oh, la-di-da-pi, oh, who cares about you and your skin? I'm like, well, but I think more for vanity than anything else. I wonder how many guys just want to do something like this for vanity, not to de-age their skin, as opposed to have what is weirdly the more horrible consequence, which is what you were describing.
I don't mind, really. And to be honest, we don't mind if people protect their skin with somebody else's product. We generally are quite a mission-led brand. We want to educate people, and then the dream would be that every man uses an SPF moisturizer every day. That's the dream. And it doesn't have to be ours. But yeah, that's the biggest hurdle for us is changing that mentality. And it's going to take us 10 years, I think. It's a bit like the smoking campaigns in the 80s in Britain. I just think it's going to be a hard, long slog. But, you know, hopefully we'll be in 10 years' time, construction workers and outdoor workers will all be doing what you were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. Well, you mentioned there's a difference between the sun protection and skin protection. Could you dwell on that a little bit and how it relates to your products?
Yeah, so the aggressors that are attacking your skin every day are UV. That's the big one. That's the sort of 80%. That's the elephant in the room, I describe it as. But there are other things, you know, if you're, let's say in winter, cold, icy wind, low humidity, ultimately you're trying to maintain hydration in your skin. And there are things that are going to try and remove water from your skin or attack your skin. And so in winter, for example, you know, UV is still a factor, it always is, but cold, icy winds, smoke, pollution, dryness, going in and out of central heating, in summer going in and out of air conditioning, all these things are affecting the sort of equilibrium and barrier of your skin and the sort of health of your skin. And so, you know, protection in the winter might be more about hydration. In the summer, it might be more about blocking UV. But ultimately, we're just trying to equip people with tools that they enjoy using and that will protect them all year round. But as I say, that sort of SPF moisturizer all year round is the one that, you know, if we could put a poster on a billboard on a highway and everybody could see it and then act on it, it would be wear SPF moisturizer every day.
Right. And why do you think it is that men are more prone, I don't know if that's the right word, but you mentioned the numbers, it's 2 to 1 versus women. So why is it affecting guys more?
There's two reasons. One is we don't protect ourselves as well. You're in the minority, but we don't protect ourselves as well. Women typically wear makeup, which naturally has some of the elements of skin protection in it. So a foundation, for example, often has minerals in it that block the sun. And some of those ingredients even go in sunscreens. And they also, most women's moisturizers sort of have SPF in it, because Vogue magazine has been telling women for 20 years that the sun causes aging and then it damages your skin, and women are just more receptive to that message. And maybe men's media hasn't talked about it so much. Right. The second reason, and probably the more important reason, important in terms of scale, is men are very bad, and this is a generalization, but are very bad at seeing a problem and acting on it in their body or on their body. So, you know, the number of men we speak to have said, oh, I saw something on my skin and I was picking at it or it bled and I just thought, oh, I'm too busy, life's got in the way, kids, work, whatever. And they left it too long, by which time it was cancerous and by which time it had spread and unfortunately it was too late. And whereas women, generally speaking, are better at seeing something and acting on it and going to the doctor and having it removed. And so that's why, you know, skin cancer is so preventable. We really spend a long time trying to explain to men that protection and detection is the key to long-term healthy skin. But as you say, you know, sometimes men don't really think, or we human beings in general don't think about worst case scenario, and they don't think it's going to happen to them. And it's too scary and it's too big, I'll just ignore it. And that's why we often just talk about the cosmetic message, which is aging. And I know I'm sort of moving around a bit, but that sort of anti-aging element of protection is quite an important one, because if that's what makes people change their behavior, then we're happy.
Yeah, I think guys, I don't think this is true of women. I think it's exclusive to guys, where they'll reach a pain threshold and then do something with it. And that could be either a threshold where you'll look at something and go, well, I don't know what this is, and it's got to the point of no return now, I best go to see someone. I think teeth is the best example I can think of. When your tooth is like, oh, you just got a little niggle, well, let's see how it goes in a week or two, when maybe it'll go away. You know, maybe I'll run it off like a jogger or something.
Totally.
And then after a few weeks, then you have to book the appointment for a few weeks down the road. And then by then it's game over, right? You're in agony. But yeah, so Billy, I'm always curious about the business side of brands like yours. And you mentioned the story and the journey that you went on. How does it come to fruition? Do you then go and source some capital? Do you invest personal wealth into this?
We sort of worked for 15 years, the three of us, and decided to put our own capital in. We sort of thought, part of the reason we're doing this is because we have a mission and a purpose, but equally we don't really, we're three friends who've grown up together, and we don't really want to have investors or bosses or people shouting at us or asking for financial reports every month. We're trying to do this on our own. Most people listening will probably say, you guys are mad, and they're probably right. But it just means we have to be really patient. We're really careful about decisions we make, but equally that really hurts when we make a bad decision and invest badly. It's quite important to us that we make the price accessible. So there's no point us having a mission to stop everyone getting skin cancer if our product costs £50. So we try and make it as cheap as we can afford. So our moisturizer is £15 for 100ml, which is, that's quite a lot of moisturizer for £15, but the ingredients that we put into ours, that is equivalent to a very expensive moisturizer with other brands. But we try and make it as cheap as we can so it's accessible, but we also try and make it such that we don't lose money on a sale, so that we can just keep the wheels spinning. We're not looking to buy customers at a loss in the hope that the lifetime value of that customer will eventually mean we are in the money. We try and make it work on every sale from the moment we get a customer. And we don't always win in that battle, and we're still struggling to find the balance. But really, that is the ambition, is to try and do it on our own.
Well, I mean, commendable, right? I mean, we have a lot of people on, and there's nothing wrong with like the crowdfunding element or the kickstarting route. But I do always think there's something to it where you put your money where your mouth is. I kind of always want to lean on that side, because I feel like, and especially where, like you say, there's a lot more autonomy now. Being an independent, you always want to strive for that independence within the business as well. That must be quite refreshing.
I don't think there's a right or wrong. Like, we have to turn down a lot of really cool, exciting opportunities because we just don't have the money. Mm. And, people listening might say, well, raise money, crowdfund, and you'll be able to go harder and go faster. And that might be right as well. We're doing what feels right for us. And, if we do this podcast again in 12 months' time, we're probably crowdfunding.
Yeah, we've got the angel investors online too. Are you sure?
I'm definitely not smug about what we're doing. Like, it might be wrong.
Yeah. No, I get you. But it's just kind of where I gravitate towards, I think, gone by. I'm always curious also, because my sister's doing a skincare portfolio. She's a beauty therapist. And she's talking to me about the product testing and what it takes to go back to the lab and then the back and forth. Yeah. How much of a process was it for you, especially with these kind of products?
So with these kind of products is the operative words, because, excuse me, skin protection is basically, it's medicine. Like, it's taken quite seriously by regulators, and we're making a product that has a functional role to protect from people getting skin damage. And so the regulatory hurdles are huge in terms of testing. And I've jumped straight to testing. I haven't even started. I should have started where it begins, which is formulation, but I'll work backwards now. I've started. So you have to do UV testing. You have to test it on people. You have to test it in a lab. We chose to do dermatological testing on people so that we could make claims like non-greasy. But you're right, the hurdles for this particular product are enormous. And there are also a very limited number of products or ingredients you're allowed to use for it to be deemed safe on human skin. So you're sort of limited by what you can use. So that's why I sort of started there, because you sort of have to work back from what you're allowed to use. So knowing what you are allowed to use, you can then go to the lab and formulate, and you say to the formulator, which was Rob actually, who's one of the co-founders, Jono's brother, this is the dream, what we're trying to achieve. So it was really important to us that we made a product that was non-greasy, that was as close to single swipe as possible, that didn't sort of make your eyes sting, that it survived sweating, that it was water resistant. We had all these criteria. And that was exactly as you described your sister experiencing. That back and forth in the lab took probably 18 months.
Wow, yeah.
And then you've got to go through testing. And you've also got to test the packaging to make sure that the product isn't interfered with by the packaging. So there's a it's a long old slog, especially skin protection.
And is it all done in the UK or is this outside?
Our lab is in Devon in Paignton, and we manufacture in Dorset in Poole.
Right, okay. That must be an ease on some restrictions, I guess, because you're not dealing with outside sources or having to visit factories abroad or wait on time zones or anything like that.
Yeah. Definitely. The sourcing chemicals or ingredients is hard because a lot of them come from, we use some really, really high quality ingredients from some of the best suppliers in the world, and they're both in Germany. So sourcing ingredients, particularly at the moment with all the supply chain issues, is proving hard. But you're right, being nimble and being able to manufacture and develop in the UK really is helpful.
Yeah. What about the branding as well? How did you settle on the branding? You mentioned packaging there. Maybe you can just dip into that.
Yeah, I can't really take any credit for that. We outsourced. The only thing I can take credit for is the name. I was on an aeroplane and I just saw on the lid in front of me, you know, the table flap thing. It said, "Your life jacket is under your seat." At the time when I was thinking about the business or starting the business, and I thought, life jacket, that is the name, because it is literally a life jacket, figuratively and metaphorically.
And I dig the name, by the way. I should have opened with that, but I really do dig the name. I think it's very appropriate for the messaging of the brand. But yeah, sorry, go on.
So I gave this branding agency the name and explained the story and what we're doing, and they did everything else. I mean, one thing, they gave us the logo, they gave us the colors. Obviously, I gave them a brief and I said, like I said to you at the beginning, we're trying to create something that shakes the tree a bit, that isn't like everything else on the market. So they did some brilliant work. We now sort of hand that work over to our own designer, who takes the baton on and carries it on in her own interpretation. The brand was nothing to do with me, I'm afraid.
No, but it's still, it's still one of, like we're mentioning, hoops and obstacles and things that you have to kind of plow through. Sure. Branding is such a huge element, not only to kind of make it stand out, but to give your brand the identity that you have in your mind, right? You've got to transpose the vision of your brand into something physical, and that's not always an easy feat.
That's the thing I struggle with the most. At the beginning, I found that so, so difficult because it was all in my head. And I didn't know how to describe. I'm not a creative person. I didn't know how to get what was in my head out verbally. And actually, the moment where it started to take shape was when we got a photographer involved. So I found this photographer on Instagram whose work I loved, and I just messaged him. And he's been our in-house photographer. He's done every single product shoot, all our lifestyle photography. But he is the one for me that's brought the brand to life through his photography. He's taken what was in my head and put it onto, you know, he's put it, injected into Life Jacket. So he's had a massive role to play, I'd say.
And how does it work with the other co-founders between the three of you? You're kind of constantly on emails, on the phones. I mean, how do decisions and the process get worked out?
Well, I mean, we're great friends. John and Robert brothers. We laugh a lot. Like we never fight really. Like we know that Johnny's got a super short fuse, and we normally probe him, Rob and I. But the division of labor is simple. Rob is the chemist, and he's a brilliant formulator. So he does any new product development. Jono is, we describe him internally, or like Rob and I, as the mule. He just loves repetitive operational tasks. So he does all things supply chain, fulfillment, everything. And I quite like marketing. So that's sort of left with me. Right. So that's how we divide the labor. But no, we have a very simple voting system, which is if we're not sure about something, there's three votes there and 2v1. Nice. Right?
That makes sense. Yeah. And so I was going to touch upon the marketing. How do you start with a brand like this, and how do you market it purposefully?
Yeah, zero to one is really hard. We've been finding, you know, I used to work in a business with sort of really big brands, and that's just as hard because it's really hard to get growth in old, sort of staid, mature brands. We get tons of growth, but, you know, off a very, very small base. And just getting brand awareness and getting attention when people have got people are scrolling and they just see so many things in front of them, just getting their attention is so hard, especially our message I said at the start, I struggle to get the pitch across succinctly because it does require a bit of explanation. And so it's quite hard to market when you do have a slightly I guess, a longer story, or it does require a bit of description.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do all the obvious things. We paid advertising on Instagram and Facebook, paid search on Google, outdoor advertising we've just dabbled with, but really just getting our product out there and getting in people's hands is great for us. So sampling, attending events, which has only really been possible recently. And we do a lot of partnerships with other brands. That's been really great because we share communities. And then clearly, like, working with athletes and ambassadors is another element. But there's nothing we do that sort of really stands out. We just do lots of all the things you should be doing, and you're just creating layers and layers and layers of noise and hoping that people pick it up in a few different places, and then it sort of sinks in. It's nothing genius, I'm afraid, but it's just lots and lots of different touch points.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that what you might, I don't want to say consider your weakness, so it takes an explanation, like you say. It's, you know, it's not something that you can put in a tweet bio or whatever, but no. I think that's certainly one of your strengths, is that you do have to bend someone's ear and go, well, look, yeah, if you've got a minute, let me tell you about my brand. And then you've hooked them. You know, you're not just telling them about something that's all surface, no feeling. It's, you know, there's an underbelly to the brand. And I think people really do dig stories. I know I do, whether it's a t-shirt brand, whether it's, name it, it could be a pair of headphones. I like something that's got something that I can tell somebody about and pass on a nugget, you know.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's kind of, you'd say, I mean, we definitely see exactly as you say, if someone comes to our site, conversion rates on our site are brilliant. And I think it's exactly as you say, it doesn't need, once they're in and they read the story and see the products, the branding's nice, whatever, they've probably heard it from somewhere else. If you put me in a room with someone, if you know, we were sitting next to each other in the pub and I was speaking to you, I think the day after you'd probably think, I should probably go and buy this. Like, why 15 quid? Why not? Yeah. It's a good thing to do. It is just, it does require that chat, and you can't do that with millions and millions of people, and you can't get it across quickly on social.
The website that we mentioned, lifejacketskin.com, definitely worth checking out. Can't wait to try some of the products. Where do you hang out on the social? Is it Instagram?
Yeah, lifejacketskin on Instagram.
Is that you behind there, people messaging you when they get through?
Yeah, one of us.
Yeah, one of the three. Good to know. All right, great. Listen, love the brand. Keep doing the Lord's work. Billy, thanks again for taking the time out.
No, thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.